Well, welcome everybody to Course in Miracles. We have made it to our diversion that's lasted many, many weeks to in the manual. And probably we'll see how it goes tonight, but probably we'll end up going back to the text next time we meet. This last section, open-mindedness, wonderful. Almost too obvious, you know, the idea that you would be open-minded, and that's a good thing. But then so is everything else it suggested, right? Generosity, defenselessness, patience, tolerance, honesty, trust, defenselessness, joy. It all seems so obvious.
I'm reading All I Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten by Robert Fulghum.
Nice.
One of the stories made me cry because it was so much about open-mindedness. Yeah.
I assume you all saw Jacqueline's cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
Loved it.
I didn't see. Oh, is that Jacqueline's cartoon? Nice.
Empty boat.
I can't hear you. Uh-oh.
Oh, hang on, Jacqueline. I got to unmute you there. What was that?
I muted myself. I just to say it was one that, you know, I was sent to me, so I sent it on to Andrew because it was so apropos to what we cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I had somebody send me a message. You know, this the community of the Course in Miracles is much larger than who actually shows up on Zoom. And a lot of people just won't do Zoom. But a lot of them still get the emails that just read the cartoons, I think. I mean, I can. But that particular one, Jacqueline, I got some comments. Yep. I got somebody who busted their own ego on it and says, God, that's me. My fuse is too short. I just get angry too quickly. I shouldn't do that. Yeah. It's good.
You sure feel guilty about getting angry too. That'll help.
Then you got to forgive yourself and you got to get the Holy Spirit going. Need the whole book. What's that, Tim?
I had the experience of insight earlier this evening with my wife, helping her to set up this miniature village that she bought piece by piece over her, you know, younger years when she had kids and whatnot. And we took it out of deep storage and set it up. And I just had the insight of watching her experience going into the past and reliving each piece. It's got a story with it. And a kid did this. And I learned how to do it. And part of what I saw was how I am with her. It's almost like I was, you know, I had to step outside of my body to do that in some sense. And I'm just looking at me and my behavior. And I got to tell you, some of it was quite unpleasant because you see what a son of a gun you can be to live with. Mm-hmm. And usually my ego does not allow me to see that. It keeps it hidden. I suffer as a result of holding those things, right? But I still keep them. Won't look at it. I might have to, you know, do something with it. And so, I mean, you know, that the next step is right what you said. That was perfect. You have to learn how to forgive yourself now, right?
Yes. And the amazing thing is that when you catch yourself like that, Tim, and you're willing to see yourself or watch yourself to get out of the insane loop and see it. And then when you got the guts to actually let it go, it loses its energy. And at the same time, you're taking power back from it because you're saying, I get it. That is not me, but that is what this body was doing. And the essential message in that forgiveness and that letting go is that you're not your body. That you can see it happening, you can see it doing it, and you've decided not to do it. You've decided not to do it, even though it may come up for Tim, you who are not Tim, You are driving Tim, behind Tim. You actually have to get between your thoughts to find this identity we're talking about.
But everything you said is right to me. That, you know, that sounds, all of it, spot on and very useful, because it helps me to take another step, one more, you know, in the right direction.
And Tim, because of habits, the Tim body mind could possibly cough up a few more of those unattractive responses to your wife. But Tim, the spirit mind now, is watching. The two never happened at the same time. This is why forgiveness is so important. The forgiveness is a release. It's a stopping of the path you're on and getting off that horse. And then reaching for the light that could be there instead of the darkness that was. So it really is. You know, I need do nothing. I love that section. We'll go back over it again one day. I need do nothing when read, I believe, correctly. It's really, you're quite...
I was reading from a couple of weeks ago, or maybe last week.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of weeks ago, I go back and read, when we read a little bit out of a section, I go back and read the whole section. And it was either on page 194 or 101, because that's what I read today.
Mm-hmm.
And in one of those sections, it says the ego is looking for allies. And since your body is not part of God's creation, that's the ego, that's the ally it goes for. And I thought, oh my God. Every time I let my bodily senses, my bodily feelings, all that other stuff come up, that's my ego just having a good time.
Yeah, naturally, in the world of ego, it's natural. It's just like for an alcoholic to take a second drink, third drink is natural for the alcoholic. For the ego... And for you, for your believing ego, you're the pattern and the habit of ego, then it's natural for you to first think about self-esteem. Think about your image. Think about what people are thinking about. Think about whether or not it was fair what they said. Think about what you want to say before hearing what they are saying. This is the self-centeredness of the ego and egoism, egoaholic, egomaniac. We're becoming more skillful with our mind. Now, here's the good news. It's one mind. You got the ego. You got the Holy Spirit. They exist in the same dimension. Mind. This is the really good news. Because that means it's you're only one thought away. You're one thought away from your freedom. You're one thought away from being more skillful with your wife. And you know this is true because all sorts of, there's many, many times in your life when somehow, some way, you did reverse your thinking. You did reverse your path and say, you know what? Go on the high road. Go on the peaceful road. And you just arrived now at a holy instant. You've done it by choice. That's what we're doing. And in tonight's focus, we're going to be invited by Jesus to discover, maybe just one, maybe the only one there is, but discover, just pick one. We'll sit for a couple of minutes so you get a chance to get your hands around this very simple question. Very personal. It's all very personal. It's all very personal because this is you saving you. Of course, it's personal. Whatever works for me wouldn't be just right for you. But what you come up with your Holy Spirit talks to you. And the question is, why? Just pick a reason why. You hesitate to forgive. just feel your way into honesty of why you hold a grudge, for example, or why you continue to condemn yourself as somehow inadequate, or you condemn someone else as being guilty or inadequate. Just take a moment and fish around. Have your Holy Spirit weigh in. Let's take a few moments and just sit with this. It's clear enough that you would like to have peace. And yet you hang on to these really ugly thoughts that are not peaceful. You do that. Why do you hang on and even rehearse ugly thoughts? Now, can you imagine with maybe you've come to an example thought? Can you imagine still having that thought, but being completely at peace with it? No longer a scolding or a warning or whatever it was that made it ugly. And now, can you be grateful for that thought in some way? And when you're ready, please open your eyes. Rejoin the meeting.
Grateful was the hardest.
Anybody want to share?
I'll be real brief. Thich Nhat Hanh says, no mud, no lotus. So that's how I found the way to get grateful for the self-condemnation and guilt, you know, experience.
Yes. Indeed. That's exactly how it is. What do you got, Emily? Yeah, I got your mute. Go ahead. Oop, we both got your mute. Okay, go ahead.
It was interesting because I found the place where the self-condemnation came in, like in the guilt, and then I had to step back and go, well, that's not me. That wasn't me who did that act that I got blamed for, or that I'm blaming myself for. That wasn't me. And then the same thing that I'm grateful for, that I can say when something good comes out of me, like it's the Holy Spirit, and it's not me, I'm grateful for the Holy Spirit that's moving through me, that does these wonderful things that happen around me. So I don't get to claim that either.
Well done. Yeah. We can't give the body credit. The ego would love to give the you, individual, separate person, credit for the beautiful, good things. Would love to do that. But then you would be thinking too small. Good job. Good job. And Jacqueline?
Well, the word that kept coming up for me throughout that whole, it was a very nice meditation actually for me, was innocence. That I haven't accepted innocence. And the gratefulness is when I, you know, am thinking somebody's guilty or feeling guilty, it's the pointer to me that I haven't accepted the atonement. Yeah. It shows me where I have not accepted the atonement. Yes. But innocence just was all through that. It was just the sense of innocence. What is innocence? It was beautiful. It was a great meditation.
Beautiful. Innocence has become your guiding light. You feel the truth of innocence. And this is a door that you can go through. it's touched you. And the idea is of innocence. This is represents a truth for you. And now it will cut through. It's a reset button even. Follow it. This is a gift. Follow it. This is a light you bring, Jacqueline. And you have shared it with us before, and it is very inspiring. Thank you. Luann, what do you got?
I got two things to the first one. And the first one was, the ego wants me to believe I'm unworthy. That was my first thought. And then the second one that came along with it, without that thought, I wouldn't be part of this world. And I don't know where that came from. I didn't understand it when I got it. But then I just kept going when you kept on prodding. That's not the right word, but when you kept on talking. And the question was, can I be at peace with it? And the answer was yes, but I don't know how. So but as far as grateful goes, yes, as I give it to the Holy Spirit for guidance. So it felt like a circle. If I go to from ego wants me to believe I'm unworthy, and then I go to the Holy Spirit for guidance about how to handle that, if that makes sense at all. A little bit like a convoluted way of saying what Emily was saying.
It's really good to do these inquiry, insight, ins toward yourself to bust yourself and make your positive choices known. It's good to speak them every once in a while.
I've always loved it when we were in group, when we were together in group, that you did the little bit of meditations first.
Yeah, I like those too. I polled this group, and we had like 12 people or so, 10 people from the beginning. And 80% of people did not want a meditation. They wanted to jump into the material.
Really?
Yep. They're like, let's get on with it, Andrew.
Meditations for me were always my way of first getting on with it.
Me too.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good to settle the room. And yeah, I'll do another anonymous poll.
Good work. Yeah, re-poll us.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's already half right there. I've seen the thumbs up in the air. So yeah, I think it's really good to get yourself centered, and especially when we're topic oriented in this meeting, We can all get on the same topic. Yeah. Yeah. It's good. I think they didn't want to have everybody share their opinion on the meditation. That's what people didn't want me to do.
Well, there was 15 or so people in those meetings.
It would take more than half the meeting. That's true. That kind of makes sense. Yeah. The talk, have me bring up the topic, and then everybody sit with it for a while, and we cut it off there. We don't go around and share. Yeah, it's hard, though, because people all fired up when it's something they discovered. It's kind of nice. Delicious. Okay, good. Now, let's dig in and have Jesus deliver to us the 10th characteristic of a teacher of God. I don't know where that title came from. I think these are the 10 attributes of love. Trust. Honesty. Gentleness. Joy, defenselessness, generosity, patience, faithfulness, and open-mindedness. This is what it means to love. Wow.
I think what I always used to say, all I really wanted to do was love.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't doing all of those things. And I knew it. The love that I was trying to express was not complete.
Yeah. 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 Everybody turn to page 15, 16 in your manual for teachers. Remember, we're letting go of the selfishness, small s. You know, that part, it's kind of like being scolded, right? You know, you've been bad because you've been focused on yourself. and you've not been sharing and open-minded and loving, and therefore you are not been rewarded with joyfulness. But then maybe you discovered also it kind of sucks to be centered on yourself. As rich as you may get, you can't share it. And it's not as interesting. So, it's an interesting circle of achievement as you give, you receive. Tim, when you get there, would you read for us paragraph 1 on open-mindedness?
The centrality of open-mindedness, perhaps the last of the attributes the teacher of God acquires, is easily understood when its relation to forgiveness is recognized. Open-mindedness comes with lack of judgment. As judgment shuts the mind against God's teacher, so open-mindedness invites him to come in. As condemnation judges the Son of God as evil, so open-mindedness permits him to be judged by the voice for God on his behalf. As the projection of guilt upon him would send him to hell, so open-mindedness lets Christ's image be extended to him. Only the open-minded can be at peace, for they alone see reason for it.
Excellent. Thank you. We discussed most of that paragraph last time, but we didn't discuss sentence 5. As the projection of guilt upon him would send him to hell. Good. Yeah, it's divisive, projection of guilt. Let's look at this now. So open-mindedness lets Christ's image be extended to him, to your brother. Let's Christ's vision be extended. So first of all, anybody want to volunteer? Anyone want to teach us what Christ's vision is in A Course in Miracles? Anybody? Anybody courageous? Come on, Ross, give it to us. Oh, wait, Emily! Emily! Hand it over, Emily. What would Christ's vision be?
Well, I'm thinking when he was on the crucifix and he was being punished for something that an accused and beaten, and nothing about that was right for him or true for him, and he forgave all those people.
Father, forgive them, for they know not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's, to me, what forgiveness seems like, extended, even when you're wrongly accused.
And he knew he was dying. There wasn't like he could say something and they'd say, all right, we take it back. We'll pull the pins and you can come off the cross and we'll fix you up. It was not about to happen. In forgiveness, release was his final utterance and from his heart.
Sincere.
Yeah. Anybody else? Jacqueline?
Christ, oh, innocence. You see only innocence. It just comes back to me.
Yes.
Love it.
That's all.
You see only innocence.
I would almost say Christ's vision versus Jesus' vision was about seeing everyone as one.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Somehow, some way, denying this divisive judgment of perception that would make things obviously not one. And seeing only one. That would be Christ's vision. It would be absolutely going against what the eyes see.
You certainly can't see that way if you're looking at everybody as different.
It would be a lie to utter oneness when you actually see and feel and believe differences that are material. that are mutually exclusive. You're involving yourself in a lie that can only lead to chaos, because you can't actually share being with something that is not part of you. There's an impasse that occurs.
Is that quote ever in, I don't know, I can't remember things. So is that quote ever in the, they say, I am forgiven for they know not what they're doing. Is that in that book?
No, it's not in the book.
And the reason for me that I think it's true is because what I believe is that God doesn't judge us. So he doesn't, and he only thinks of us as one. So that's why I said Jesus, but not Christ.
Yeah, he doesn't condemn. He did. God doesn't forgive because he never condemned.
Yeah.
The words would be meaningless. Yeah.
It doesn't mean we have to, it's okay for us to condemn. It just means I don't think that God would have that kind of vision.
Well, yeah, we're in a situation where we have already condemned.
Right.
We've condemned each other to our differences. We've condemned ourselves for being not loyal to goodness, deserving some guilt. Could've, shoulda, woulda been better, right? You coulda, woulda, shoulda, but you didn't. So you condemn yourself too. And you condemn that SOB who deserved it. You condemn them too.
So for me, open-minded is looking at our condemnations, at both ourselves and others, and saying, you know, that's not what God thinks of us or sees us as. That's not what vision is. And since we're not his body, then our purpose is to stop seeing ourselves as different. Open-minded is that all of us are one rather than all of us are different. And we have to be open-minded to their difference.
And if we're one, truly one now, not just words, a knife, as sharp as it may be, cannot cut itself.
That means, in a way, I can understand what.
Does that make any sense, Luann? A knife cannot cut itself.
It makes it sound right, but I don't understand what the purpose of saying it is.
Well, then it's a koan for you.
Yes.
You know it's true. What I said is true.
Absolutely.
And I'm also challenging you, how far did you take oneness? They go together.
Okay. Well, thank
you. Ross, what do you got?
So actually in chapter 2, the paragraph is, miracle-minded forgiveness is only correction. It has no element of judgment at all. The statement, Father, forgive them for what? For they know not what they do, in no way evaluates what they do. It is an appeal to God to heal their minds. There is no reference to the outcome of the error. That does not matter.
Cool. So thank you, Ross. It is in the book.
That way.
What's that?
It's in there in that way.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Good.
I always remember that because it's a great paragraph.
Mm-hmm, it is.
No way evaluates what they do. It's so important.
Nice. Nicely said. Thank you. Thank you, brother. Thank you for bringing that. Excellent. Excellent.
So healing the mind. I've always thought, as much as I can get rid of the ego, and I want my mind to be eventually totally God's mind, little tiny bit at a time.
You'd rather be in truth. That's what I heard you say.
I'd rather be in truth.
Falsity tends to fail. Your simple desire for peace and love, it fails because falsity is not continuous.
Yeah.
What I said about your questions, can I be grateful that I said yes to, can I be at peace? And I'm grateful. And I'm grateful because I can give it to the Holy Spirit and get guided from that about how to find peace.
Mm-hmm.
Or come to this class.
Oh, and God. As Tim was telling us earlier, the biggest step is to stop circling in the negativity. Even just to say, oh, a breath. To stop following the ego, because that allows you to switch from body-mind to spirit-mind, from divisive duality competition to inclusive oneness and sharing. They are mutually exclusive. When you're on one horse, you have to stop. You have to get off that one horse and get onto the other one. And you know when you've done it because you immediately start getting more peaceful and patient. And suddenly you like yourself. You like how you look again. Yeah. Good, 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 good. Okay. Luann, on page 16, would you read for us paragraph 2?
How do the open-minded forgive? They have to let go all things that would prevent forgiveness. They have, in truth, abandoned the world and let it be restored to them in newness and in joy, so glorious they could never have conceived of such a change. Did I read that right? Nothing is now as it was formerly. Nothing but sparkles now which seemed so dull and lifeless before. And above all, are all things welcoming, for threat is gone. No clouds remain to hide the face of Christ. Now is the goal achieved. Forgiveness is the final goal of the curriculum. It paves the way for what goes far beyond all learning. The curriculum makes no effort to exceed its legitimate goal. Forgiveness is its single aim at which all learning ultimately converges. It is indeed enough.
This book seems to be putting a lot of weight on this forgiveness word.
And it's interesting that all that weight is associated with open-mindedness.
What's the opposite of open-mindedness?
Prejudice.
Yeah, right? Completely believed prejudice. Yeah. Completely, not even questioned. Intolerance. Yep. Perfect judgment. Emily.
Could you talk about that in the way of projection?
Projection is the perfect partner for perception, which is a perfect partner for separation. Projection says that something in one place gets applied to another place. Literally, a projector in the movie theater, the film was in behind the one wall and then across the empty room, and then the image shows up on the other wall. Nobody looks back into the little white hole behind you to see where the image is coming from, because you got the image sprayed on the opposite wall. It is not there. If you wanted to find, you want to get closer to the source of the image on the wall painted 50 feet wide, you would not go to the screen. You have to go the opposite, exact opposite way and get back to the source of the projector. And then you would find film and you could actually stop it. You could stop it and look at it. So.
Like Tim.
Yeah, and like Tim. Exactly. Yes. Thank you. Otherwise, if you stay on that one horse of just staring at the picture and trying to touch it, it just keeps rolling on, and then there's nothing there. And this is because you're at effect and not cause.
The monk in the rowboat.
Yeah. He argued with his imagination. It's really the story of our awakening, of you getting personal, getting back to the source, back to the projector, and leave the projection alone. Leave the images alone. They're not actually there. You're not upset for the reason you think. Nothing you see means anything. You're upset because you see something that's not there, says A Course in Miracles. I'm going to bring you back to the source. I'm going to bring you back to the actual cause for the discomfort. And you unplug it there. Unplug the projector and the image goes away. But you could destroy the screen and the image will still be dancing on the wall behind it. It's like, get divorced and you're still chasing your own demons. Jason, what do you got? Do you have your hand up? No? Okay. Oh, Luann. Luann did.
If I can remember what I wanted to ask. I can't remember. Sorry.
Okay. That's just fine. I'll come back to you.
82-year-old mind holds the thought for about 20 seconds at the most.
Well, you earned it.
Yeah, I got here.
You got there. Hey, yeah, you earned it.
It was important, too, because I remember I really wanted to ask this, but oh, well.
But certainly, Emily, that is one of the metaphysical ways to understand what we're doing. The illness is that needs to be healed is that we're focusing on projections instead of the projector. There's a paragraph that just wonderfully covers that. Turn, we have been there a long time. It's one of my favorites. I can tell because I had to think about the page number. Go to page 5, maybe that's my mind getting old. Oh, no. Go to page 595, paragraph 12.
You're too young to consider yourself old. You're a baby.
Oh, okay, good. I know. Guess what my mom did? What is today? Today is Thursday?
Yeah.
So guess what my mom did Sunday afternoon? At about 6 p.m. California time. At 92 and a half years old, she got the world's record for the oldest woman to run a marathon.
Oh,
wow. She got it. Mom, I'm so glad you did it. I can't believe it. I can't believe it. So what? I was nervous for you. You're going to push yourself too hard. She says, I had it when I was 80 also. Then somebody else took it. Just all sorts of people, but nobody knows. But this time my sister Lauren is sending out the press release and getting her in the books and everything. So,
great story. Amazing.
There's some people here there's a man here at 99. Oh my God, stuff he says and remembers.
That's cool. That's cool. Look at page 595, paragraph 12. Jason, are you reading tonight? So 595, I got your mute. Dig up paragraph 12 on page 595.
This world is full of miracles. They stand in shining silence next to every dream of pain and suffering, of sin and guilt. They are the dream's alternative, the choice to be the dreamer, rather than deny the active role in making up the dream. They are the glad effects of taking back the consequences of sickness to its cause. The body is released because the mind acknowledges, this is not done to me, but I am doing this. And thus, the mind is free to make another choice instead. Beginning here, salvation will proceed to change the course of every step in the descent to separation until all the steps have been retracted, the ladder gone, and all the dreaming of the world undone.
Beautiful. Thank you, Jason. It's A Course in Miracles in a paragraph. You know, it's so important that you recognize, however dimly, that this is coming from you. You are not a victim. You can say, oh, Andrew, the woes I've had, the problems I've had, I couldn't possibly have designed that for myself. Yeah, the world's designed so you can't, that you're completely have amnesia about what's actually happening. Sure. But that's why we need miracles and why you're talking about waking up. But waking up is pretty radical, isn't it? Waking up, it means you were dreaming and you were sleeping and you're completely involved in another dimension, sleep, a dream, and then you were not. Whoa. However dimly, you must, in a meditation, I'm sure, achieve this miracle-minded state where you would wake up and own the possibility that this is not a mistake, that part of you is doing this, has driven this, has dreamed what you seem to be experiencing as an identity. The reason why it's so important that you somehow touch this, what we call the real world, the vision of the real world. The reason why it's so important that you touch this is that when the opportunity comes, and it comes like a merry-go-round goes around, it comes again and then it goes away and then it comes again. And when it comes, that you would just, that if you really want to get off this merry-go-round and go to the next level, you will not do it if you're afraid. You will only do it if you say, oh, more love, more understanding, more light. But if you believe that your happiness lies in your body and in this merry-go-round, you will continue to go around it, of course, because you will follow what you think makes you safe and happy. So when we talk spiritual awakening, it really is a dose of medicine. And absolutely, we're healing a sickness that will continue until the cure is applied. The cure is applied by you. Internal, inside job. Ross, what do you got?
It's kind of out there, but sometimes it occurs to me that my experience of the dream is unique. In other words, that I have made it up to the extent that nobody else that I perceive out there is actually experiencing the dream the way I am. In other words, if I was in someone else's shoes, another aspect of the mind, they might not even be experiencing COVID. They might have this complete other, I mean, I know everybody here is part of my dream, and you're all going to agree that COVID happened. But it's almost like there's this other dimension where somebody could be having a unique experience of the dream, and there is no COVID in their dream. I know, it's kind of...
I'll tell you this. There's
why not? It's a dream. I made it up. I, the mind, made it up.
Ross, there's
my
a metaphor.
Aspect of the mind.
Yep, to support you, you know, you are essentially absolutely right. There's a metaphysical imperative that says there cannot be duplicates. If oneness is true, there cannot be duplicates that would make two. So your dream is yours, buddy, and nobody else sees it like you do.
Including the characters in it, you know, there may be, it's just hard. I can't even go there. I somehow, there's something there.
There is something there, and you're having a blast, my friend. And there's no end and no limit.
It's like that whole science fiction-y thing of the multiverse.
Yeah.
My universe is my universe. And even though the characters in it, they might have, as soon as they have a different thought, they go off on some other tangent into some other multiverse. Something like that.
All right, Tim, what do you got? I think Tim's got the wisdom behind this.
Oh, boy.
Ross was the science fiction idea. That's actual physics. So there is they're trying to figure out what happens, in the universe with expansion and all this kind of thing, our growing universe that we live in. And one of the hypotheses is that it's called the many worlds theory. It was proposed in the 1950s by a PhD named Hugh Everett. And it talks about exactly what you're thinking of science fiction, that there's almost an infinite amount of the universe is created with every decision. And there's different variants of you as well, not just somebody else's experience, although that exists too in some of the universes. But that's legitimate physics. It's not be all, but it's one of the favorites.
But isn't the point to wake up from all of that and realize that you were never in any of those universes?
That takes it a step beyond physics, my friend.
Yes, hopefully, we wake up to all the multiverses, all the universes, all the aliens, and all the stuff that the Pleiadians and the Greys and all of that we wake up from. Because it's all a bunch of nonsense.
Yep. You've got yourself into a course calls it fragmented state.
And yeah, way more fragmented than we can possibly conceive.
It's so fragmented, it doesn't hold together. It's so fragmented, it just crumbles and it doesn't longer resembles anything useful. You're so far from love, cherishing your little fragment, that you've forgotten how to love. Mm-hmm. You're making substitutes for it. That's all. You could, that's all. And naturally, you're going to want to go back to comfort and to happiness and to the power, back to the source. Naturally. That's why you're all on a spiritual path. You say, there must be a better way. There's a light in me and it's not reflecting on the outside as much as I would like.
The whole life, birth, death thing, no, it doesn't work for me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Tired of it.
Yeah, tired of it. Empty. And yet there is something in you that says there is another way. Mm-hmm. And you're lucky. I think you're lucky you got it before you, in the middle of your life. of this, because you've accomplished so much to get into a character who cares about light. You accomplish a lot to get a character that cares about dark. That's huge. To go away from love, that's huge. But it was easy because you did it from love. You've left love in love. So it was very easy. Very easy. And you continued experimenting from love in more and more plurality until separation occurred and you got your wish. It was no longer will, because it's not creative. Can't keep it, because it's not based on truth. It's not one. And you got yourself fragmented and got yourself into a place where you're punching yourself in the face. You're like, oh. So Course in Miracles is a return to love from blocking love. That's exactly what we're doing. Okay, look at this paragraph on 595, paragraph 12, before we jump back to our manual for teachers. And I want to draw your attention into the middle paragraph this time, a little closer. Sentence 3. These miracles are the dream's alternative. An alternative sounds like a miracle. Because you're going to substitute with the alternative. So indeed, the miracle is a dream's alternative. And what is the alternative? Here comes the choice to be the dreamer rather than deny the active role making up the dream. It just diagnosed how it is you appear to be walking around in a body as the body. The way it did it is with the D word. You've successfully denied being the dreamer. You did it. You did it. Da, 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 da. Look at the previous page. This whole section actually is wonderful on this whole topic. Maybe we have just enough time to read it tonight. Wouldn't that be cool? It's been so long, and it really is on topic for us, but we'll see. Look at paragraph 7, sentence 1. This is highlighted in my book.
Me too.
The miracle establishes you dream a dream and that its content is not true. That's what a miracle does. It busts you dreaming a dream about horror, darkness, anger, guilt, death, separation, worthlessness, aloneness, whatever it may be. Some flavor of in the ego's domain, separation's domain. But the miracle says, gotcha, not true. And how's it not true? Because you're fantasizing that it is true. Well, how can I know it's not true? You know it's not true by stopping your thinking about it and seeing what remains. You need do nothing just for a moment. Take a breath in that moment when nothing's happening and go, well, that's better. Busted, busted. You bust yourself by stopping this sequential stinking thinking that's causing you the discomfort. And then you discover the power of your mind. And now you're back into Course in Miracles. You're like, I need more. You achieve a moment of peace and I need more. And this, and you're starting to cure your very sickness. Sentence 4, miracles are the glad effects of taking back the consequence of sickness, which I'm describing, to its cause. You're like, oh my God, it wasn't happening to me. All of this wasn't happening to me. I found the power to choose peace instead of this. Can I just stay there now? I hope you've asked that. I hope you got yourself in a good place during your meditation and said, I think I just want to stay here for the rest of my life. I hope that's happened to all of you. Like, I think I just want to stay. What's that, Jason? You want to talk to us? No? Okay.
I want to know where we are because you said, are we in 7, paragraph 7, or where?
We're in paragraph 12 on page 595.
Okay, we went back to 12. Okay.
Yeah, I was speaking of sentences now. Oh, you're right. You know, I did mention paragraph 7, the sentence 1. I did. Now I'm back in paragraph 12. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Luann.
I guess I could say you're welcome, but I don't feel like I did that much to
Got everybody on the same page, literally. That's a good thing. Okay, number 5, sentence 5, the body is released. What? How do I get my release, my body? Is it, this whole section is saying your body, this chapter, it says the hero of your dream is your body. You're hanging on it so tightly and it's in the way. The body is released because the mind acknowledges, this is not done to me. But I am doing this. So you get this inkling, this however dimly, I'm telling you, however dimly. You don't have to have this thought suddenly wake you up and you walk around completely clear-headed. No, you just have to know this is true. You just have to know, you have to touch the sobriety of knowing somewhere in your mind that it's one mind and it's dreaming. And you're acting out the dream as a fragment of a whole. However dimly, this must dawn on you. And then the gig's up. You will not be afraid now when the rest is shown to you, when revelation occurs. Oh, well, here we go. Next sentence. And thus the mind is made free to make another choice instead. Beginning here, da-da-da-da, play the music. Salvation will proceed to change every course of the step in the descent to separation until all the steps have been retraced and the ladder gone and all dreaming in the world undone. There it is. Ross, what do you got?
So to continue with my madness. So.
Oh, yeah, please.
So
it's always good to have somebody crazier than you because it makes you feel better. Go ahead, Ross. Help us out.
So it means that I put you all in my dream to support the nonsense that I made up. Somehow I put you all there, and I can choose the Holy Spirit part of my mind to reinterpret all of you to support me in waking up from the dream. So there's the choice, but it's just, it's weird enough to think, I'll tell you why this comes to me. Because for years I've been saying, wouldn't it be nice if I could stay home and they could just send me the checks at home and I wouldn't actually have to show up to work. And it happened. I stayed home for 14 months and they sent me the checks. And I just went rock climbing. So in a way, I feel like I manifested COVID, and the only way that's possible is because it's my unique dream, and I put all the characters in it, and I manufactured that, illness, virus, whatever you want to, that thing. And that's how bad this can get. You can manifest the whole thing to the way you dream it up. And It seems like that's what I've done.
It was not allowed in Wuhan?
Sorry for all of you.
It was Ross?
Well, it worked out well for me.
Ross was dreaming.
Who is this guy? He's nuts.
Right.
The mute button.
That's the universe I dreamed up, and sorry for putting you all in it, but it's my dream, so yeah.
Buddy, we're here for you, because of you.
So that's
you're the only one who's not awake, and we're waiting.
So that's right. How crazy I actually
according to your theory.
waiting
on you, buddy. But there's no time from where we are, so we don't really care how long it takes you.
Isn't that
yeah, it's fun. It is fun. You don't recognize how much fun it is.
And nobody sees it the way I do. So
Nobody can.
We have dreamed so good that we have separated ourselves in every single way.
Yep.
Yeah. Your aspects of the mind, which happens to be also my mind.
Yep. Yeah, the course is very specific on that. There's a little paragraph on, I like to go here once in a while too, just so I can remember the page. 332. Yep. I still got it.
Is it the last paragraph of the previous part or the first paragraph of the power of holiness?
Let's look at 332 and read out just paragraphs 2 and 3, the power of holiness. Yeah, you're right, Luann. There's some good stuff on this page that we're not going to go to. It's so cool. Ross, you have something else to say? Your hand's still up.
Oh, what page?
Okay, page 332 in the text. And I think it's Emily's turn to read. Emily, would you read for us paragraph 2?
Sure. Andrew's favorite paragraph.
No, that's 3, actually. I didn't give you my favorite. I'm going to give it to Jacqueline this time.
Okay.
But this leads up to it. This warms us up.
There is a tendency to fragment and then to be concerned about the truth of just a little part of the whole.
Okay, that's personal. Jesus is saying to you what you have done, how you did it, and where you find yourself now. Please reread that sentence.
There is a tendency to fragment and then to be concerned about the truth of just a little part of the whole.
Just a little part of the whole. You get stuck up and jammed up, maybe for lifetimes, on a little part of the whole. Emily, what is the title of this section?
The Power of Holiness.
Okay, good. There is another way. Please continue.
And this is but a way of avoiding or looking away from the whole to what you think you might be better able to understand. But this is but another way in which you would still try to keep understanding to yourself. A better and far more helpful
way. Hold on a minute. Keep understanding to yourself by just taking that little, your favorite piece, that little fragment of the whole. What is it? Is it a woman in her body who's a great artist or a poor artist or a great mother or a bad mother or a wife or not? Or what is this little fragment of the whole that's become a complete obsession? Isn't it interesting? It's like so personal. You got to take this really, really personal and allow A Course in Miracles to bust your ego on how serious you've taken that. What do you got, Ross?
Well, it seems like it's kind of like what I'm saying is that I've made up a story that's unique to my aspect of the mind. And I'm interpreting it, I manufactured it, projected it, everything else to suit myself and nobody else. So I'm not only projecting it, I'm interpreting it just to suit myself. And it is, it's a fragment of the multiverse. And then I just decide that that's my truth when it really isn't. The truth is one, as it always has been. Mm-hmm. The truth is unchangeable. The truth is eternal. Mm-hmm. And so interpreting anything outside of one and eternal and unchangeable means that that's what you have decided your reality is, with your little body, with your little world, with your little universe. Every thought you think molds it into how you want it to be.
And with a lot of power.
Seemingly.
A lot of power to dream. Yeah. Lillian, what do you got?
And I think the ego says, and I love being unique.
Yes, it does. That's his job. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Okay, Emily, what do you got? Let's continue.
You do not understand them, either in part or in whole. Oh, wait. I think I missed a sentence. A better and far more helpful way to think of miracles is this: you do not understand them, either in part or in whole. Yet they have been done through you. Therefore, your understanding cannot be necessary. Yet it is still impossible to accomplish what you do not understand. And so there must be something in you that does understand.
It is much to say, back away from the itty part that you've been fixating on. Miracles have been done through you, despite of you. Despite your focus on some little aspect, you have opened your vision here and there, and your heart and your mind filled.
So in a way, in that first meditation, that's where the gratitude comes in. Mm. That's where it comes in for me. It's like, I don't understand this is going on. I'm just so grateful. Thank you, Holy Spirit. You came to my rescue.
Yes. You are loved. You are loved by the source forever.
I love eternally. The fact that the word something is capitalized.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Jacqueline, would you give us paragraph 3? I got your mute.
Okay. To you, the miracle cannot seem natural because what you have done to hurt your mind has made it so unnatural that it does not remember what is natural to it.
Okay. That just seems like now it's impossible. We're never going to get this. Mm-hmm. We're never going to get it. Right there in that sentence, it says the way you've conditioned your mind, it's weird to go back to oneness. Yeah. And it is weird, isn't it? In fact, the Course calls it sickness. The separation is more natural to you than oneness. Good, Jacqueline. Please continue.
And when you are told what is natural, you cannot understand it. The recognition of the part as whole and of the whole in every part is perfectly natural, for it is the way God thinks, and what is natural to him is natural to you. Holy natural perception would show you instantly that order of difficulty in miracles is quite impossible, for it involves a contradiction of what miracles mean. And if you could understand their meaning, their attributes could hardly cause you perplexity.
Nice metaphysical clue on the universality and generalizability of A Course in Miracles. It says, when you start getting this miracle thing straight, then the order of difficulty of miracles is obvious to you. Mm-hmm. We talked tonight about going to the cause and leaving the effect alone. Leave the screen and go to the projector. If you want things to stop, unplug the projector. You want to change the movie? Change the film on the other wall where you can't actually do something about it. You go to the cause. We're learning to awaken to our mind as the dreamer. And we'll do it gently while we are engrossed in this character. And we'll start to learn of the power of our mind to go back to free, go back to having a few glimpses that we're free. A few times our mind settles in peace with the idea, I'm not actually a body. Here and there is good enough. And then to accept the utter truth that could not be any other way. I am still as God created me. Yeah.
I had a funny dream the other night. I was running through my dream saying, no one can fail. No one can fail. No one can. I was, heralding to everyone, no one can fail, because it's in the book. There's a place where it says no one can fail.
Yes.
I'd read it.
Yes.
And I was like this letting myself, because I'm all the dream figures, right? Letting myself and everyone in the dream know no one can fail. It was like good news, the good news. It was a fun dream.
I expect to see that in the newspaper tomorrow for the Sentinel, Jacqueline. Woman running down Pacific Avenue and Ocean Street yelling, no one can fail. What does she mean? That's great. It's beautiful.
Nobel Prize for that one, Jacqueline.
I just want to take put your attention again, those last few sentences. Holy natural perception would show you instantly that order of difficulty in miracles is quite impossible, for it involves a contradiction of what miracles mean. Well, actually, it's not what I wanted to show you. What I wanted to have you think about is that the miracles have been done through you. that you could not be the author of miracles. You are the author of separation, the you that you know, the you that you see in the mirror. And it's okay to let that go, because without fixing it, see, without fixing it, because that's the projection. That's what's on the wall. That's the movie running. Leave it alone. You can change your mind about the world, not change the world. The script is written in that way. You're not going to change the movie that's already loaded and projecting. So that's why we really have to go to the root of thought itself. And that's what we do a lot of times in these meetings, is we really challenge how you're thinking. And tonight's focus is open-mindedness. But now we have just enough time. Go back to the manual for teachers and let's complete our journey. And look at this interesting paragraph. And Ross, when you get there, I got your mute. When you get there to page 16 in the manual for teachers, and let's read paragraph 3.
You may have noticed that the list of attributes of God's teachers does not include things that are the son of God's inheritance. Terms like love, sinlessness, perfection, knowledge, and eternal truth do not appear in this context. They would be most inappropriate here. What God has given is so far beyond our curriculum that learning but disappears in its presence. Yet while its presence is obscured, the focus properly belongs on the curriculum. It is the function of God's teachers to bring true learning to the world. Properly speaking, it is unlearning that they bring, for that is true learning in the world. It is given to the teachers of God to bring the glad tidings of complete forgiveness to the world. Blessed indeed are they, for they are the bringers of salvation.
Nice. Back to basics. Tim, would you read that paragraph also? Same paragraph. Number 3 on page 16, Manual for Teachers.
You may have noticed that the list of attributes of God's teachers does not include things that are the son of God's inheritance. Terms like love, sinlessness, perfection, knowledge, and eternal truth do not appear in this context. They would be most inappropriate here. What God has given is so far beyond our curriculum that learning but disappears in its presence. Yet while its presence is obscured, the focus properly belongs on the curriculum. It is the function of God's teachers to bring true learning to the world. Properly speaking, it is unlearning that they bring, for that is true learning in the world. It is given to the teachers of God to bring the glad tidings of complete forgiveness to the world. Blessed indeed are they, for they are the bringers of salvation.
Wow. Check out. Huh? Yeah.
Right. Okay. I like verse 6. You know, what I often wonder sometimes at night, you know, what's my function kind of a thing? What am I supposed to be doing in this dream? And there it says, there's where the function is.
Yeah. And to bring true learning, and then he goes an extra step there, Tim. He actually tells you where you're going to be applying the learning. A Course in Miracles defines learning as change.
Yeah.
That's part of its curriculum. And so it says, bring true learning to the world. So if I may, I'll do the translation. To bring change to the world.
A relief from ignorance.
The world in your mind.
Okay.
Ross's projector is running with Ross World. And so really what we're doing is we're going to bring true learning to Ross World in his case. It's very personal, very personal, very powerful. And then he goes on. He goes on. He says, next sentence, kind of clears his throat and he's tapping his finger on the table. He says, well, you know, properly speaking, to go all the way, he's saying, it's really unlearning that they bring, you know, as you wake up, you're not taking on something new. You're not taking on the truth. You're not discovering the truth. You're discovering the dream. You're discovering the power of your mind to make up a world. To make up a world. That's what your learning is. But then we just said it's made up. So really it's not a learning. It's an unlearning. And that's why forgiveness would be so easy, because you're letting go of something made up. Not something true. Not something essentially valuable. Not something real. He continues. He says, because unlearning, that's the true learning in the world. The only change that the world needs is to be unlearned, to be unknown as true. I've told you, you know something that's not true. You know something that's not true. You see the problem? You completely absorb and take as sacrosanct. You know something that's not true. That's why the Course says you're sick. I love this sentence on page 383 when it gets dark like this. Here we are in a dark moment. I've kind of called you out here a little bit. Jesus has called you out and said you're sick. I've said you're sick. Let's go to 383 and read one sentence on 383. It is the antidote. And it's up to you to do it.
Where are you reading on 383?
The middle of the page. I forget the paragraph number. It's highlighted. It's got to be. It's paragraph 4. Sentence one. Here's the antidote, folks. It was dark a moment ago, but I'm going to bring the light. Happy dreams come true. Not because they're dreams, silly, but only because they are happy. Do you see the circle? Do you remember in the workbook, my function is perfect happiness? Your function is actually to perfect happiness. You put a little diacritical mark over the E, so you pronounce it perfect happiness. And now you got your purpose. Of course, who wants anything other than happiness? Love is natural. Happiness is your creation, your invention. And that's basically what the rest of the paragraph says. Okay, back to page 16. So we finish this properly before we close the meeting. There's a lot of good news in paragraph 3. He says you have an inheritance of some really good stuff. Some stuff that can't be changed. And you've made blocks to the awareness of love's presence. That's what's in sentence 5. It says, while the presence, you know, God's gifts are obscured. Well, God is obscured. Well, the truth is obscured. So you remember on page 1, we're removing the blocks to the awareness of love's presence. That's the job. So while it's obscured, the focus properly belongs on the curriculum of the undoing. I think you remember a workbook. In the workbook, it says that the job of the workbook, the lessons, is to undo. It's another place where the book talks about it. But I also wanted to draw your attention to some of these givens. Some of the givens that are, they're in your creation. These things were an extension of goodness, of God, of love, that you really are. That you don't have to practice. Go to workbook 113. We have just enough time.
Well, I like line 2 in paragraph 3.
Talk to us.
Well, it says terms like love, sinlessness, perfection, knowledge, and eternal truth, which are our inheritance. I'm not sure it's complete, but that's, you know, that's kind of as much as I've ever heard all in one sentence.
Yes.
But God has given it so far beyond our curriculum, etc. And it tells it just above what God has given, or at least some of what God has given.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, Luann. That's a focus I want us to have, is that these sinlessness, the truth of your innocence. It's Jacqueline is having an awakening by feeling the recognition of the truth through innocence. She's owning it. It's coming. This miracle is coming through her as she shares it with us. But it's an essential truth. A knife, as strong, as sharp as it may be, cannot cut itself.
So I guess now that I think about it in terms of this, what that means is, as God's child, we cannot hurt ourselves like we do in this dream.
Yes. That's correct. You'd have to dream, make up a dream and a nightmare, as it says early on in chapter 6, that you made up not only dreaming, but nightmares of hurting yourself.
Yeah.
But in truth, you cannot. In truth, now, in the unhappy dream, the nightmare of the separation life, you not only hurt yourself, but you've planned to die. You've planned to be threatened by the end of your existence. And all along the way, minor deaths, losses of time, losses of respect, losses of money, losses of promised love, etc., etc. Little mini deaths all along the way. Yep.
If you wonder why you'll ever want to do that.
That's right, but there's a good reason. There's a good reason. It's good. I think it's healthy to wonder that, but you must remember that all of this happened from a loving state. It was very easy. Mm. It was very easy to work on the multiplicity and fragmentation from a loving state where all is one. There crept a tiny mad idea of separation that was ended as soon as it began, but nonetheless, you've been fixating on this little fragment quite a bit. Diagnosis. All right, everybody. Thank you for studying Course in Miracles with me.